You know, Bill makes my brain bleed.
That's me, Bill Bola.
Bill's a walking aneurysm.
Should rather be a walking aneurysm. I'd rather be a walking aneurysm than a walking
carpet.
Okay.
Good comeback.
No, what was I going to say?
Walking aneurysm with bedroom eyes.
A walking hyperboil. No, a walking
carpet.
Yeah.
No, carpet. That's funny too, but that's not what.
Slow your roll, nerf herder. We got it.
This is going to bug me.
You know what's going to be great is when Bill...
Hemorrhoid! That's the word I was looking for. A walking hemorrhoid.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You're Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple, Garak.
Dax. We might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast.
And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland, Paul Spataro, and Dr. Bill Robinson.
Bloody hell.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, a Two True Freaks presentation. As ever, I am your host, guide, and whatever the hell you want to call it. Our prophet. I will be a prophet. Your prophet guide through every single episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I am Andrew Leyland, and I am joined as ever by my trilogy of terror, Mr. Paul Spataro.
I'm a trilogy.
You're a third of a trilogy. Doctor, but he's not really a doctor. Bill Robinson, he just plays one on a podcast.
Don't ruin the magic.
Prophet guide. Are you like one of those late night infomercial things?
Yes, that's exactly what I am.
Okay.
And the Squire of Wheater, just a J. David, but you can call him Dave. Hello.
Hello. you scared me. I wasn't expecting that. You have far more energy than I do.
You got the best intro because you edit this shit. So.
Yes. I mean, I should put in some like wrestling entrance music, like John Cena.
Da, 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 da. I love that your reply though was yes, yes, I do.
Well, I do
today
now.
On the show, we will be covering episode 23 of season 5.
Their battle has ended. You got your revenge. But their war is just beginning.
We've launched the missiles.
Now, to save the galaxy from total destruction.
The death toll could be in the millions.
Two arch enemies.
You want to fight, mister? I will give you one.
Face off in one final showdown.
I don't intend to fight you, Captain. I intend to kill you.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Wow, we're barreling towards the end of this. Blaze of Glory, which was directed by Kim Friedman and written by Ira Stephen Burr and Robert Hewitt Wolfe. But first of all, Bill is chomping at the bit to give us the Star Trek news that is A, nothing to do with Star Trek, and B, not news by the time you hear this.
This is your old news. Orville is on the air and is already finished by the time you hear this. So we will probably cover some of it in a future show.
Yes,
way to throw a Paul over it.
Sorry, Paul. Seth MacFarlane's not at all like Star Trek. Oh, no, Mrs. Not any chance. Please don't call your lawyer's version of Star Trek. Oh, sorry, not Star Trek at all. The Orville is back for its second season. The first season was a hugely pleasant surprise. I think we've discussed it on the show before. Mm-hmm. I think the only weak link was MacFarlane himself, who I still don't feel is as good a dramatic actor as the show needs.
Yeah, he's just got to get a joke in there,
he's a fine comedic actor, but I think there are times that the show needs a drama edge to it from the leading man, and I don't think he's got it. Everyone else in the show is absolutely brilliant, and I genuinely do love the Orville. The first episode of the second season is very low-key. We won't spoil it because Paul hasn't seen it yet, but it's basically a mock time. Mm. But it's very much a character piece. But the humor in this second season opener is a lot more subtle than the humor in the first season. And I genuinely laughed out loud at two or three of the lines in the show as it went through. But it felt like a character piece more than a comedic piece, even though it very definitely isn't Star Trek. Oh, no, missus.
Paul, where do you see the second episode?
Is that one very definitely not Star Trek as well?
It is, but it isn't, because it's even...
That's the Orville in a nutshell, isn't it? It is, but it isn't.
Let's just say it's almost like Mr. Barclay was on this one with his hollow addiction, and that's all I'm going to say.
All right, but they don't have Dwight Schultz, do they not?
No.
Oh, it would be funny now, but Bill trying to avoid spoilers, if we watch it and it was Dwight Schultz and he's got a hollow addiction as Barkley.
Yeah, that would be great.
You know what? Just
I didn't spoil it.
Not only is the season over by the time these people are listening to this, Infinity War or Avengers Endgame, I'm sorry, has come and gone at this point.
And it was so very, very good, wasn't it?
That was a great movie. Wonderful ending, I think.
I think I'm going to cry when it ends.
Yeah, I don't want to say goodbye to Captain America. I love Chris Evans. I watched The Losers over Christmas. Chris Evans is fantastic in that film.
I have not seen all that. I've seen the scene where he's got his fingers, finger guns.
The comedic high point of the film. I love that bit. And then no one else is seeing his shirt, right? I mean, love that film. Absolutely love The Losers. Think it's great. Anyway, do we have anything else before we move on to this week's episode? That'll be a no, then.
Yeah, that's negative.
Okay. Blaze of Glory was, as I said, the 23rd episode of Season 5, originally aired in May of 1997, May the 12th, to be exact. I looked syndicated, so I don't know that you can be exact about that. The guest cast for this one is almost all returning actors. Kenneth Marshall from Krull is back as Michael Addington. J.G. Hertzler is back as Martok. Aaron Eisenberg is back as Nog. The only real major supporting character that he's new is Gretchen German as Rebecca, and she doesn't really have a lot to do, to be brutally honest. Captain Sisko receives a recording of an intercepted message. The few surviving Maquis terrorists who have not been wiped out by Cardassia's Dominion allies have launched a massive retaliatory strike against Cardassia. The missiles are believed to be equipped with cloaking devices, and unless they are stopped, Sisko fears the Dominion response will envelop the entire quadrant in an all-out war. Sisko goes to Michael Addington, former Starfleet officer turned Maquis leader, now in prison, who is likely the message's intended recipient. Addington refuses to tell Sisko how to stop the missiles, so Sisko takes Addington with him to compel him to help. Upon entering the Badlands, with Addington still uncooperative, Sisko traps him into taking over the runabout's controls to evade two pursuing Jem'Hadar warships. Addington finally agrees to help Sisko find the launch site to deactivate the missiles, but vows to kill him afterwards. The Jem'Hadar warships again appear in pursuit, forcing Addington to try a riskier maneuver to evade them, one which requires Sisko to perform a dangerous operation on the ship's propulsion system whilst in use. This is bad. You should never do this. The plan is successful, though Sisko is injured and angered in the process. They soon arrive at Athos 4, a tiny fog-bound planet where the launch site is hidden. Upon landing on the planet, they discover the facility is crawling with Jem'Hadar soldiers, and many of the Maquis are dead. Sisko and Addington fight their way to the command center, where Sisko is surprised to find a dozen Maquis prisoners, including the woman who transmitted the original message. Addington introduces the woman, Rebecca, as his wife, and reveals that there are no missiles. Rebecca sent the message as a code to let Addington know they had safely escaped the Dominion and arrived at Athos 4, the fallback point. Addington knew he would need Sisko's help to evacuate them and manipulated him in order to reach the location. Sisko is furious at being lied to, but relieved that all-out war is no longer imminent. He and Addington fight off the Jem'Hadar while directing the prisoners towards the runabout, but Addington is shot. Insisting Sisko and the others continue without him, Addington stays behind to fend off the soldiers and is killed. The end.
Aww.
So is Athos 4 London?
Yes, a tiny fog-bound planet. It should be Londinium.
Londinium, any place.
I was going to say that, but I didn't know if everybody would get that. I know everybody here would get that, but I don't know if everybody out there would get that. Everybody out there get that?
Everybody out there got that. Yeah.
Got it.
I really enjoyed this one. Again, we've got another in this string of season five episodes that is exceptionally good. I love that Eddington's just playing Sisko throughout the entire episode. And I also love that he never plays his hand. You only find that out at the end. And there's a brilliant bit when Sisko says, well, what if I hadn't made you call me? And he says, I'd have volunteered. So he had all his bases covered. I thought that was absolutely fantastic. I'm going to miss Eddington. I think he was one of the best foils for Sisko, even though I didn't find him as compelling an actor as Mark Alamo. But I felt there was more of a personal relationship between him and Sisko that they really did a good job of mining. That said, they did need to tie off some of these plot lines. Mm-hmm. And finally getting rid of the Maquis, which by all accounts only existed in Deep Space Nine to set up Voyager, something Ira Stephen Burr was never happy with anyway. I think getting rid of the Maquis at this point is good because they've got a lot of balls in the air at the minute. And as we go into the final two seasons, it's better that we've tied off one of those plot lines.
I agree that at this point, the Maquis kind of are unnecessary story-wise, so it is good to kind of tie that off. I also agree that Eddington is a great foil, and also that he's not the actor that Mark Alamo is, but that's not really much of a criticism because most people aren't. This whole episode, this one I found gripping all the way through, which is kind of funny because, you know, last episode I said it kind of put me to sleep, even though I really liked it. This episode I really liked also, but I found it much more edge of my seat, even though I watched them in consecutive viewings. So the other one put me to sleep, and then this one kind of woke me up again. I would say the only negative, and this is really a nitpick, so it's not really going to factor in taking anything away from the episode. The only negative I had is that Rebecca, Eddington's wife, I sensed no chemistry whatsoever between the two characters, and you lost a little emotional resonance at the end when Eddington dies. You know, it was like, you know, it almost felt like who cares from the marriage point of view of it. Like that, it felt like there was more of an emotional resonance to Sisko than to her.
Yeah, it felt like that was tacked on to make us feel a bit more sorry for Eddington than perhaps we would have. And I don't really think that it was necessary. We felt sorry for Eddington as it was, because by the end of it, I mean, I love the scene at the end of the episode where the characters, Dax and Sisko, are actually saying, well, what kind of person was he? We never really found out who he was. And Sisko's doesn't matter. He was loyal to his own particular cause right to the end. And I like that. I liked that we never really knew Eddington, but we know enough about him. And he's had enough of a recurring presence on the show for us to feel something when he goes. And yeah, we didn't need the wife tack on thing. Maybe they could have just been, it could have been his girlfriend or whatever. The fact that it was his wife, no, didn't matter at all, did it?
I think you could have just mentioned that he had a wife, because to me, the whole purpose of her character there was to let you know that Eddington was a more complex character than what you saw. There was more to his life than what you saw. Look, he's even got a wife that you didn't know about. So you could have just had a throwaway line to mention that he had a wife, and it would be enough.
I'll disagree with that.
You didn't have to introduce the character.
The reason is, it also changes Sisko's point of view, because it's not, I mean, in For the Uniform, it was very black and white. You betrayed Starfleet, you must pay. Now, there's some shades of gray in there, you know what I mean? So Sisko seeing he has a wife, he has loyalty to these people, and he's gonna put his neck out. That changes Sisko's perception with what's coming, even though it's subtle, it's not directly referenced. That's going to make a big difference in what's coming down the pike for this show.
And if he's got the loyalty to his Maquis crew, and we never meet his wife, but we find out that he has a wife, it changes it?
No, it would, because this is okay. A visual. This is shorthand, is what it is.
It changes it for you. For me, I don't think it changes it. For you, it does. That's fine.
Well, I mean, it also it's important for the audience to see it through Sisko's point of view, because Sisko, if it wasn't a wife, if it wasn't a life, something normal amidst all this turmoil, it wouldn't have the same impact.
I think he should have had a daughter there as well. That, with her, maybe. Might have been a better, maybe had a little bit more emotional punch.
Yeah, the Maquis not out just planning terrorist attacks. They're living a life as well.
They're living their life, yeah.
And that's why knowing,
to hide from Sisko that he had a daughter, though.
And that's why knowing he had a wife, to me, is the key to it. But actually meeting her didn't seem necessary.
We agree to disagree. I'm just that's why I.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying for me, I didn't need to meet her. And if I was going to meet her, maybe it would have been better if they just had an actress where he had some chemistry with her. I didn't feel any chemistry whatsoever with those two characters.
No, that actress was pretty bland. I'll give you that.
She didn't really have a lot of screen time, though.
No, I don't blame her. I'm probably blaming the script more than anything because they didn't give a chance to feel any emotion between the two of them or any connection. I mean, it's just so quick. Oh, by the way, that's my wife. Let's move on.
Mm-hmm. All right. What about Nog's little subplot?
Loved it.
I loved that as well. I love the beginning where Sisko's cut them tea, and it's tube grubs. That was genuinely funny. And all the stuff with him and the Klingon, you're either very brave or very stupid. And it's Nog's line, probably a bit of both, that has Marta warm to him.
Yeah.
and it's just, even that scene, as he's like building up the courage to confront them. I think, you know, most of us at some point in our lives, we haven't had that occur. But we've had a situation where we had to muster up the courage to do something that clearly, you know, terrified us. And, you know, it could be anything. It could be, you know, asking somebody out or, you know, confronting people or whatever. But something that terrified you and you had to muster up the courage and the fortitude to do it. And I think that scene really just kind of showed that so well. I think, you know, that was possibly Aaron Eisenberg, one of his best acting performances that we've seen on the show.
Especially when you put little diminutive Aaron Eisenberg next to Martok.
Yes.
It's absolutely brilliant. It works far better as a visual gag than it did a couple of weeks ago when he was trapped in between Sisko and Martok.
Do you think it'd be okay if I pass by?
Yeah, I think this worked better because it wasn't just the joke, which is what that last scene was. Whereas here, it was funny because then Nog had to turn around and stand up to him.
And he did.
Yeah, and he did an exceptionally good job of it. And I'd almost forgotten that Jake Sisko was on this show, so...
Yeah, it's nice to see him again.
Who?
Exactly. But overall, I think this one was more important for actually wrapping up some storylines. Because obviously Voyager didn't need the Maquis at the moment because they were trapped in the whatever, Delta Quadrant, Gamma Quadrant, wherever the hell they are. And the Maquis, like Paul just said, just are largely irrelevant to Deep Space Nine at this point anyway. Mm-hmm. So getting all that out the way was good. It was nice to have Eddington back, but I don't really have a lot about this one. It was thoroughly entertaining all the way through, but there was no emotional resonance on this one for me like there was with Children of Time.
Yeah,
you know what we did in this one though too is we wrote off Eddington and we let his character have a heroic ending, but we also had him still never really ever fail to outwit Sisko.
Mm.
Even throughout this episode, he played Sisko throughout it.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, that is one of the things that they play on through the show, in that throughout this entire run, Eddington's the only person, or race, or creature, whatever you want to call it, Eddington's the only one who ever outwits Sisko.
And he does it consistently, including in this episode. Like I said, he meets his end in this one, but it's not because he fails to outwit Sisko. He still outwits him every point, even to the point where, you know, that's why Sisko's there in the first place, is because he was outwitted by him.
Eddington got what he wanted out of this. Even if he didn't come out of it alive, it saved his wife, which is what he was after. And the little scene at the end where Dax says the two of you were a lot more alike than you'll ever admit. And that's the crux of their relationship. They don't like each other because they are very similar to each other.
I was waiting for him to, when he's like, "Men, sing a song." I was waiting for him, to sing the song from Les Mis when they're on the barricades. I was like, no, wait, that's right. He doesn't actually sing a song. But I can just hear it in my head.
I would have preferred if they sang Master of the House.
Master of the House.
I just realized something about this episode that hadn't hit me when I was watching it, but as we're discussing it, two things, actually. One, I'll get to in a moment, but in the end, Eddington had enough trust in Sisko that it was Sisko that took his people away. He sacrificed himself, but Sisko's the one that rescued him, and it didn't hit me until we were discussing this, like, oh, wow. Yeah, they don't like each other, but they know what each other is capable of.
They respect each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or he just knew that Sisko was his bitch. Say that.
Yeah, because ultimately Sisko does just leave him to die.
Yeah.
He's also fine. He'll be right along. Let's go.
Let's go. This does mention also that Cal Hudson's dead as well.
Mm-hmm.
and you get more emotion out of Ben Sisko's reaction to Cal Hudson's death than we did out of Bernie Casey in that entire two-part episode.
Hey, easy on Bernie Casey.
Because Avery Brooks plays that brilliantly, and you're not watching him. You're watching Eddington tell him that Cal Hudson's dead. But if you watch Avery Brooks, he's torn apart by that. Yeah. He's gutted by it.
He's pained. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very clear on his face.
Mm. So, and I love that bit in the middle that it is just the two of them, and Eddington just getting under his skin with every available opportunity when he starts talking to him about food.
Yeah, he even insults him as a chef.
Yes!
He had too much saffron in the stuffing.
Exactly where to hurt him. It's not in his command decisions. It's none of that. It's in his cooking.
Yeah, you lost your friend and you suck as a cook.
But.
Try mashed potatoes!
And when he's trying to fix the boofty boot whatever that he's trying to fix, when he's trying to fiddle with the engines when they're online, and Eddington deliberately tilts the ship.
No, there was a pocket of boron gas.
Sure there was.
Sorry.
And then the second time, though, he plays it as, that was a genuine one, sorry about that. So that, to me, that really heavily implied that the first one was deliberate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So if the Marquis are all dead, as if we learned, does that
the movement has ended at the very least?
Oh, okay.
Well, even the women and the children. Well, that's they're all dead.
They're talking about them getting burned. Does that mean Ro Laren has been killed along the way?
Either she's still alive.
No, she actually, if I remember, she comes back in the books.
That's not canon. Not canon.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
No, it
isn't.
Yeah,
no,
they are.
As Star Wars fans have just learned to their cost.
Exactly. We all know going into the books that with I don't think there is an exception. That's just extra material. Just take it as it is.
No, there is one exception. Jerry Taylor's novel about the history of Catherine Janeway and Catherine Jerry's life story considered canon.
Okay.
But everything else, yeah. So, yes, Bill is right. In the novels, Ro Laren is alive. Mm-hmm. But as far as screen appearances are concerned, it's left.
Oh, yes.
She's just not mentioned. It's just ambiguous. If they wanted to bring her back, they could do, but they never have. So,
When did she last appear on screen?
Preemptive Strike, the penultimate episode of Next Generation.
And I don't remember what her situation was at the end of that episode.
She goes undercover
in the Marquis.
Yeah, she defected, which was heartbreaking.
Yeah, but she ultimately goes batshit crazy, takes over the Battlestar Pegasus and throws people out of Urlocks. So.
I was just going to say that. Darn you.
Darn you!
Only me and you got that, Bill, but whatever.
Yeah, I haven't read many TNG novels yet.
No, that's Battlestar Galactica. She plays Commander Kane.
Oh, gotcha.
She's in charge of the Battlestar Pegasus. If you've not seen Battlestar Galactica, that reworking of the old show's living legend is that show's high point. She is absolutely magnificent as Commander Kane.
See, I missed most of the later seasons, so my bad. Wow, I didn't realize Preemptive Strike was that late in the series.
Yeah, it's the penultimate episode, isn't it?
Yeah, I would double check that. I thought I thought that occurred around mid-season six, but...
See, because I think they very much wanted to keep getting her back, yet for some reason the actress just refused to sit down whenever they proffered the chair to her.
Yeah, she was wanting to get into film work. That worked out well.
That worked out well. Yeah, well, she didn't want to do Battlestar Galactica, and Ron Moore basically went to her and said, no, look what the role is. And that's why she took it.
I'm going to read a quick paragraph. I'm going to omit all the spoilers of things that happened in the books, but just say that Ro Laren is a main character in the Star Trek Deep Space Nine relaunch novels that have been published since 2001. The novels show that Ro survived the Dominion's extermination of the Maquis and joined with a few other Maquis survivors to fight their own war effort against the Dominion. After the Dominion War... Blah, blah, blah. After the war, Ro returned to Bajor and was commissioned as a lieutenant in the Bajoran militia. She was a Tyr militia.
Very good.
And that's all I'm going to say because the rest is really spoilers. Although there is, yeah, and I guess she had a relationship with Quark, which I did not know.
Oh, sorry.
What? That's what it says. Okay, replacing Odo as chief of security on DS9, eventually starting a relationship with Quark. That's what it says.
Not canon.
Really not canon.
Really not canon, no. Jeez.
Well, there's more, but I won't read that because it's really spoilery.
You know what pissed me off about this episode, though? Nobody threw a glaive. Not once.
They should have got Lissette Anthony to come back as his wife. That would have been
some, that would have been awesome.
Oh yeah, Lissette Anthony. Yeah.
I'll
be right back.
Just picture
from be in my bunk.
Dracula dead and loving it. Mm. She was in that, by the way. I don't know if anybody knows.
Yeah, I got the reference. Yeah.
Two up, two down. None of you are going to get that.
That's an English thing, isn't it?
It's BBC sitcom that she was in.
Oh.
So are we done with this episode itself?
I'm getting that impression, yes.
Because now we're moving on to attraction.
It was very, very enjoyable, but not a lot of moral issues, I guess, to discuss.
Well, there's the whole Sisko leaving him behind, but there's not really a lot you can do.
But he didn't leave him behind. Yeah. He told him to go. I mean, he could outwit Sisko, but he couldn't outwit a Jim Hadar blaster.
you do have the episodes of the show of shows where. So, you know, you go ahead and leave me. I'll sacrifice myself. Okay, and then you have the other ones of the no. We're either we all leave or no one leaves. And you know, when do they make that choice? Just when they know if we say that second one that we all are leaving together.
I'll just slow you down. Go on without me.
Okay,
no man left behind. Yeah, I mean, how many times has Sisko like dragged people along? We don't leave our people behind, Mister.
He was very quick to just say okay in this one.
Okay,
well, he had a quick assessment in this one, and if it comes down to a phrase, it's the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
He had it coming,
kind of. Yeah.
Otherwise called as see ya,
deuces.
Out, motherfucker.
That's him out of my hair. If I had her.
And neither does
back in the day. Back in the day,
we have any. Key quotes.
I really once again I think we hit the key quote in discussing the file, and that was you know, brave or stupid,
maybe a little bit of both.
Yeah,
I kind of liked when he was fighting the Jem'Hadar in the fog, and you know, he's like, well, how do I know it's you? Well, I'll be the one with the pipe. And then later, after Eddington shot the guy, he says, you have sharp eyes. He's not really. I just waited to see which of you was knocked down first, and then I shot the one who was still standing. Thank you for your vote of confidence. And of course, Cadet General.
Yeah. It was nice.
Who's that? Respect.
Yeah. That was a cool aspect of it.
And they didn't overplay that either. He didn't come in and say, oh, I respect you. It was a nice, subtle little bit, Cadet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was Kira who sold it. What was that all about?
Respect. I just thought of an old Adam Sandler.
Find out what it means to me.
Man, am I glad you went to Aretha Franklin. I went to Adam Sandler, an old bit that he did on one of his CDs. Respect.
Who did, was it Bruce Willis that did the song Respect Yourself?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was a Return of Bruno album. Yeah. I'm not saying I had that on CD.
He did do a cover of Under the Boardwalk, I remember.
And he did Secret Agent Man, too. God damn.
Under the Boardwalk.
Out myself as having that.
Out of the sun, under the boardwalk.
Secret Agent Man. Secret.
So, as you're all clamoring to know, Blaine says... Do we have
going
a song?
Down on Blaine said... No, let's not do that.
We're going down with a Blaine of Glory.
Blaine of Glory, that's better. I like that. Well done.
Hi, guys. Eddington is back. This is a nice expansion on his...
Back again. Oh, sorry.
This is a nice expansion on his relationship with Sisko and feels more natural than his last appearance. The dynamic between them is wonderful, and the twist ending supports the earlier idea that Eddington knows Sisko too well to be caught by him. It also ultimately seems to put an end to the Maquis storylines while escalating the Cardassian threat. Blaine. So, yeah, he kind of just simply... You know, stated what went on there a little bit, and yeah, I agree with everything Blaine says, as is usually the case. Anyways, I guess it's time for ratings.
Andy?
I'm vacillating on this one.
Ooh.
I don't know whether it's...
If you put a bandage over it, that should stop it.
Yay. I don't know whether it's a 4, maybe 4.5, edging towards a 5. It didn't have the meat of the emotional meat of Children of Time, but I did love that it wrapped all the elements up. I don't think Eddington's as commanding a screen presence as LMO, but he's still very, very good when he's butting heads with Sisko. 4.7. No, I'm not going to do a bill. 4.5. It's not quite a five.
Yeah, see, I'm going to also, like you, compare it to Children of Time. And while I agree it doesn't have the meat that Children of Time has, I just feel this is a more enjoyable, more rewatchable episode in the long run. That this is one that is far more likely to survive the flick test. So I'm giving it a 4.5 as well.
Wait a minute, okay. Paul. Weren't you the one just a couple episodes ago telling us not to compare episodes to other episodes? And okay, just making sure.
Do as I say, not as I do.
That's right. I'm the oldest one here. I'm allowed to make the rules, and I'm allowed to forget them when I want.
I was going
to
say, yeah, you just forget the rules.
What rules? What were we talking about? Who am I? Where am I? Can you change my diaper?
We don't need rules. Oh, I forgot about the lady. Oh, go ahead, Bill.
One thing we forgot to mention in this episode, although thank God we didn't see it, was Naked Morn running down the promenade screaming at all doom.
I love when they make references like that to Morn.
Yeah, that was very funny. Kira, again, none of us sells that, because she's just stood at the back there, and if you're not paying attention to her and paying attention to everybody else, you miss out on just her reactions to everything that's been said. She's got that wonderful smirk on her face throughout the entire scene.
So I'm going to give 4.5 Naked Morns. I guess we won't say what the 0.5 is on Morn for the various reasons we have already mentioned.
I hate being the dissenter, but I'm actually going to give it a 4.
I'm just happy to have somebody else be the dissenter besides me.
And what else is Dr. No?
I think the Michael editing was played with very broad strokes in the over-the-top performance, which kept bothering me because he didn't have any moments of subtlety until the very end. He was chewing the scenery on the runabout. And that kind of bothered me because it did kind of go against what they were trying to do, which is show the human side of Michael Eddington. Avery Brooks' performance was magnificent, though, so it did offset that. It didn't quite hit the heights for me that it did for you. Good episode. Four is not a shameful, you know, level, but...
No, not at all.
It didn't quite kick it in an overdrive for me because the performance was a little bit... And then he's so over the top that when you meet his wife and she's very bland, it just... That's where the non-chemistry comes from.
I'll concede that to you, that may be part of it. But I feel like he has played Eddington much more subtle in the past, much more laid back, much drier in the way he delivers his lines. And because of that, I feel like he's earned the right to be over the top in this one. It's a little bit more of a something where he's taking the character to a different level in this episode, as opposed to somebody who's over the top all the time.
Yeah, I could see that. I don't. It just felt like for this particular.
You don't
episode,
have to agree. I'm just saying my take on it.
I'm not saying I do agree.
Screw you, man.
If there was an episode to play it a little bit more subtle, this would have been it to get the right sympathy level for your character. So yeah, I feel pretty comfortable giving it a 4.
Yeah, sure. Be the outlier. Go ahead.
I don't do it on purpose. It just happens that way.
Nor do I in most episodes when I do that. There's a level of being your own man instead of just following the leader, which I think is needed on a show like this. And I think having a dissenter, and the dissent is minor, but I think having a dissenter often adds to the discussion anyway. So we're cool with that. We have anything else to do, or are we wondering what's going on next time?
Next time, our all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets. It's that old Star Trek Stand By the sister ship that looks exactly the same as our ship, so we don't have to build any more sets. We're off to Empok Noir.
No warning.
We're out there somewhere.
No mercy.
He's coming after us.
From a deadly predator, there's no escape. On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
You know, I had a case of Empok Noir once.
Did they give you cream for it?
Yeah.
Good.
Or was it a salve?
I think it was a bomb.
Oh, who gave you a bomb?
What do you do with the bomb? Dang a dang diggy diggy bomb. Oh, sorry.
Do you remember on Seinfeld when they had the bomb? Jackie Childs? Philip Morris.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, bye everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Ta-da.
Bye.
Listen to the Prophets at Deep Space Nine podcast is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
Okay, who's on first today?
What's on second?
I don't know, it's on third.
It's not me.
Second one. It's supposed to be me and then Dave.
Okay. I thought it was...
Well, last time around, it was you and Andy.
All right. Well, when we get to...
Last time was me and Bill.
Hey!
Oh, no, wait a minute. Let me take a look again. Hold on. Hang on, maybe you're right.
We heard you, Dave.
You're right. It is me and then Andy. I'm sorry.
I told you. Okay. Don't doubt me.
I doubt you all the time.
Well, I
still doubt you.
I would
even though I've been proven wrong, I doubt you.